In this hour, we're going to talk to Dean Hoffmeyer, who has created some phenomenal finger picks, several different styles, variations. I've used all, at least three of them, three sets of them, three pairs, three different ones. We're going to talk to Dean about how he got into making finger picks. Interesting story. I can't imagine it myself, but as Dean says, he's a tinkerer. Fascinating discussion, maybe more than you ever wanted to know, but you need to know some of it. Thanks so much for tuning in to Unreal Bluegrass. For regular listeners of Unreal Bluegrass, you know we often have authors and luthiers. I've had pick manufacturers before, the thumb pick. I've had the guy who makes capos that almost everybody uses. I've had any number of guests that are not necessarily in that performance songwriter category. And I'm very happy to have another one today. We're going to learn a little bit about finger picks. And my guest today is Dean Hoffmeyer. How are you, Dean?
Steve, I'm well. How are you?
I'm very good. I'm so happy to get a chance to talk to you. We've communicated a little bit. I actually have now. I had, Dean, when you started making finger picks, I'm going to get into that story. I bought some, I think before you were even had a name on, maybe. I remember I contacted you online, and you weren't really marketing them yet, but I had a couple of those. And then I have some Osborne picks, which are different specifications, and then I have the custom picks. So I'm well aware of the quality of your work. For the listeners of Unreal Bluegrass, banjo players, they search the world over for a finger pick that will work for them, that will be comfortable, that will give them the tone that they want. And I know from talking to other players that so many of them have landed on the finger picks that are designed and manufactured by my guest today, Dean Hoffmeyer. So, Dean, I just think it's an amazing thing that you do. I don't understand it, so you're going to have to explain it to me in the audience as to how this happens.
I'm not sure if I understand it. I have to go back to the time when I started playing banjo. I got ate up with it real bad. You know how it is.
Oh, yeah.
You don't find the banjo finds you.
That's right.
And so I started playing and began collecting, like everybody told me to, national finger picks, the old style.
Mm-hmm.
I realized before too long that national picks were different. Every time I'd buy some, they would be, you know, different stamping. And through a lot of research and help from veteran players and some folks who ran music shops, I was able to sort of put an estimate of dates when those picks were manufactured by style. And we started a website called nationalfingerpicks.com.
Okay.
And that was the history of the National Finger Picks, all the way from the patent pendings that were made in the late 20s through the recent National Picks that were distributed by the company that is now named National. So I had accumulated this rather large finger pick collection, and it caught the attention of some professional players. One of them was Bela Fleck.
The audience is very, very familiar with Bela Fleck, so go ahead. That's a good place to start.
Yeah, and I got an email, and the subject line in the email was, "Bela here," and I thought, well, that's his newsletter because I get that too, and skipped it. And Noam Pikelny sent me a note and said, "Bela Fleck is trying to get in touch with you." So I got back in touch with Bela Fleck, and he said, "I heard you've got this collection of old finger picks, and I'm working on this classical piece that I'm going to do with the symphony orchestra, and I'm interested in getting some old picks that are perfect and that will allow me to put my best foot forward." And so I met with him. He came to the state and played down the road, and we met backstage and talked about picks for a while. He selected some old picks, and at the same time, he gave me a bunch of old national picks that were mangled, beat up, oxidized, and asked me if I could do anything with them. And I said, sure, I could. And I left with that. We saw the performance and came home. I worked on his picks, and sometime later, I was headed to Nashville and sent him a note and said, I'll be in Nashville on this such and such date, and maybe we could get together and I'll give you your picks. And when I got to Nashville, he sent me a note and said, hey, we're all out at the Station Inn tonight, so why don't you just come out to the Station Inn and you can give me the picks then. So I had refurbished his old national picks and walked into the Station Inn And there he was with Tony Trischka and Steve Martin, the actor Steve Martin.
Oh, I know.
The actor, other banjo players.
The other guy, yeah.
And we sat there for about 15 minutes and talked about finger picks. And Bela told me that night, he said, you know, you probably should consider making finger picks. And I thought, well, if Bela Fleck is going to suggest that I make finger picks, I probably should look into it. And that's kind of how it started.
See, it's amazing to me. And if the listeners out there, I am one, and I have more finger picks, you know, than I need, but not as many finger picks as I want. That's the only way I can describe this addiction that you went through where you started collecting those. You just keep getting them because, you know, really, in honesty, unless one of them is crushed or melted in some kind of a furnace, they kind of last a long time. But you just get more and more. You're always looking for some mystical sound or something that you think is better. And somebody like Bela has ears that looks and listens to things that are so intricate that I can't even hear it. I know he's hearing things distinct, and that's why he wanted his old picks fixed by you. So I get the fact that you were collecting all these picks, which is a story in and of itself. Well, let me ask you this. Does the website still exist?
NationalFingerPicks.com does not exist.
Okay.
The service that I used ended their business, okay. And I haven't gone through the process of putting that up again.
Okay. All right, so I won't have people looking for that. So you go.
Yeah, but a lot of people will remember it. You know, you talk about Circle 8s and Oval 8s.
Yeah.
That was the website that named those picks.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, that's where those terms came from when I described the Oval 8 picks. That's where the name came from that website I generated in 2003 or 2004.
I didn't know. I've heard that term. I didn't know where it came from. I felt like I'd been left out when someone was saying, oh, I got some Oval 8s. I thought, yeah, sure you do. And I thought, what is that? I hadn't heard the term yet, so I had to go look it up. So it made sense to me then. But all right,
that's where it came from.
Well, that's where. There you go. That's your legacy right there. If you stop right now, that's your legacy. All right, so I get the point of collecting them, and I get the fact that you like to collect them and categorize them and sort of identify them by dates and make and manufacture. Okay, so that's one element. So then Bela meets you because he knows of the collection that you have, and then he says that he pulls out some picks that need some work. Now, how do you get from collecting picks to working on picks? That's what I don't understand. There's another skill in there that involves some filing and some squeezing and some other things. So how do you get from collecting picks to working on Bela Fleck picks, which is a pretty serious appointment?
Well, it's kind of, I have to blame my grandfather. He was a tinkerer. He had his own little machine shop, and he was always up in there making things. That skill apparently skipped a generation. My dad had none of those skills, but I enjoy tinkering. I've built banjos and guitars and you know, really have enjoyed that. And I would get these picks, and a lot of them would be really mangled to the point of where they couldn't be used. And so I found a way to rejuvenate these picks to make them usable again.
Well, before we go any further, and then I forget, is there some proprietary method that you've come up with, or is it just a way of tinkering, so to speak, with mangled metal?
I'd have to say it's a little bit proprietary, okay. But I'll give you a hint. It involves a lot of hammering.
Okay. Now you gave it away.
There's not a single pick that leaves here, and I use my garage as a shop, and there's not a single pick that leaves here that hasn't been beaten at least 15 times.
Okay.
By me.
Now, let me ask you this. My father was a jeweler, sat at a bench and made jewelry and had 100,000. I don't do that. I did for about a year in high school. But he had like 100,000 hand tools, tiny little saws, tiny little files, tiny little things. He also had a thing where you could shape. I've got this. I don't know what it is. I just thought of it the other day. You can shape a ring. You can size a ring on it by sliding it down. So sure. when you're making picks, do you have any of those type of tools around so you want to get the right size or the right width or tell me a little bit about some of those tools. And I don't want to get into any secrets, but some of these things are starting to sound familiar to me, having grown up around that element.
Sure. Yeah, I have a couple of pair of pliers, which I've ground, I call a smile into it. So one side is concave and the other side is convex. And when you squeeze those pliers together with flat metal in between them, it causes it to curve.
Oh.
And I use those to shape the bands of the picks. And that's something I built. You're familiar with Banjothon in Knoxville. I've taken those down there. And I've had so many offers to buy those pliers that I've built, but that's how I shape every set of picks.
Okay. Are you familiar with what I'm talking about as far as the ring size? It's like a metal pole that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and you use a wooden hammer or a leather mallet and just kind of bang it down to make it round, and then whatever size it is. Okay, all right. So that's not what you do. That's cool. All right. So again, you're building things, and you're over your collection period. I guess you're getting some that are kind of mangled, and you're just because they're being given to you. I like this word tink. You begin to tinker with them, and you start bringing them back to life and giving them playing time again. So let's do this. You had done that before. Bayless says, after you fix his, you had been working on picks, I assume. And then he says, make them. All right. Is that a fair up to date to where that meeting with Tony and Steve and Bayless stationed in that he knows you're fixing picks. You fixed his picks. And then he suggests to you, why don't you just make them?
Yeah, that was his suggestion. He does. He says he doesn't recall that suggestion, but I most certainly do.
I would hope so.
But the search began then for the type of metal that I would need to make a pick. And I had some patent-pending picks and sent them to a brass company in Pennsylvania to analyze. Okay. So I have a lab analysis of that metal. That analysis was very helpful when I started looking for raw materials. And I ended up discovering on the West Coast a jewelry supply center that had a metal that was what I needed. And so I started buying sheet nickel silver from them in bulk.
Okay.
And there was my raw material.
There you go. That to me, and so, all right, so now you've got raw material. Had you, prior to this recollection of yours, which I'm sure is accurate, or else why would you walk away and start making them unless Bayless says do it? Because you were happy just collecting them and fixing mangled ones. So there must have been some impetus. So I'm going to go with Bayless said, go forth and build picks. So you go, you get the raw material, but had you ever cut the material other than paring them? Had you ever, we'll say whole cloth, even though it's an alloy, had you ever cut material like that before to shape it into a pick?
No, I never had. I had some jeweler's saws, and I had done some pearl inlay work for some of the banjos. So I had a little bit of experience, cutting that stuff. But nickel silver was its own thing. It was very hard on saws, and I could make maybe four picks before I was completely exhausted. And I think I gave the first prototypes to Noam Pokelny to use.
Okay.
And he tested the metal for me. He said, dude, these are awesome. Love to get some more. And so I had to discover a faster way of getting those blanks cut. So I made a master of the blank. And started investigating plasma cutting. That didn't work out very well. Investigated some CNC things. That didn't really work out well. So I ended up finding a couple of places in Virginia that do water jet cutting. And that's how the blanks are cut, by water jet.
Okay. I don't know that process, but I do know jeweler saws, and I do know that they break a lot. And if you're using them, they kind of snap, and they're very delicate and very sharp. I actually shoved one through my thumb once when I was in high school doing some of that work, and it went straight through my thumb. And so I didn't know about water jet. I guess I could have started. I don't understand that process at all. Can you just give me a little? By the way, if you're just tuning in, I do this on Unreal Bluegrass often. I love talking to manufacturers, luthiers, pick makers, capo makers, and sound engineers, you name it. And so now we're talking to Dean Hoffmeyer. If you're just tuning in, and Dean is becoming one of the dominant manufacturers of finger picks for banjo players. We're kind of going through a little bit of that process. I don't know this water press thing at all. If it's something that's going to take too long, don't explain it. I'll look it up, but I don't know the process at all.
Well, the water jet machines are large. They push water through a nozzle at an extremely high velocity. So high, in fact, they can cut through steel. The water can cut through steel as it comes out. So, cutting through a sheet of nickel silver is very easy.
Yeah.
Water jet is used a lot for stone and metal and things like that.
Okay.
But they're able to dial in the nozzle to an extremely fine degree to where they can cut those pick blanks out to within, one hundredth of a millimeter of the shape that I'm looking for.
So this must be computer operated once everything is dialed in, right? Kind of like the
absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Right.
Okay. All right. So you've got the material. You start making picks. Like I said, I've got a set of your original picks, and that goes back several years, which I used and used and used. You made picks for. I know you make Sonny Osborne's pick. I want to talk a little bit about the changes that he asked for and that you made. But prior to Sonny coming to you, Sonny actually sells Osborne picks now, which are your picks with his name on them to
right.
the specs.
Right.
Did you make picks for other performers to specs that are other than what you had kind of gone with after you got the impetus to start making them?
I can customize the blanks. We have a custom blank and a standard blank. And I can customize the shaping to a particular player's wishes. We're at the point where we're going to begin making smaller picks for smaller fingers. And I've had a lot of requests for those. In fact, Sonny had mentioned that might be something that he would be interested in offering in an Osborne pick in a smaller size.
And you mean mostly smaller circumference around the ring or the blade?
Yeah, the band would be shorter.
Okay.
So, a lot of people, when they have picks on their fingers, they'll overlap, and they find that uncomfortable. So we're trying to work on a size that is a little bit shorter in the band with exactly the same blade and same metal. So people with smaller fingers would have a little bit more comfort while they're playing.
And for people listening, again, I'm talking to Dean Hoffman, but what we're talking about here is that the blade on a finger pick, and if you've never used one, that's okay. You're going to get an image here mentally real soon. There's a part that slips over the tip of your fingers, usually on the right hand. There are left-handed banjo players. I don't know many that go into the professional ranks. So the blade comes under your finger, the pad of your finger, and people adjust it as to how far they want it to be straight or whether they want to bend it back. But then behind that, which would be right almost, not quite right on your fingernail, depending on how far you allow the blade to come away from your fingertip, is a piece that you can kind of pinch together to fit that size. And what Dean is talking about is sometimes they overlap. So you're looking at making something smaller that won't necessarily overlap, that'll be more comfortable. But that's really how people size them, isn't it? Once you get finger picks, I just got your custom ones the other day, and they come in the mail, which is kind of neat. They come in they're not flat, but they come in a nice envelope, and you get them out and you start bending them. And I bent them around my fingers, and then everybody has their own way of kind of bending in the blade. So you want it straighter. I bend mine back a little bit, not as far as I've seen some people do it, but so I got them all fitting well. They feel great. I like them. They sound great. But so what Dean is talking about when he talks about the blade, the pick being smaller, is really that ring part that supports it around the back, so that when you kind of squeeze it together, make it your own finger pick. By the way, Dean, I don't know how many people have told you this. I don't lend people my finger picks very often once I've got them fitting just right, because they change them and they don't even know they are. Then he's like, well, which one was the pinky finger and which was the index and which was the middle finger? That's important too. That's a whole other science.
I'm with you.
And I actually started doing this where I put I have a daughter who has fingernail polish. On the inside of one, I'll put a black dot, and that'll be my ring finger, and then I always know. But I don't lend them to anyone because they always come back bent.
Yeah, then they're not yours anymore.
That's right.
That's one of the joys of finger picks is that when they're shaped to your fingers,
that's right.
They're yours.
They're mine. Yeah.
If you want to know what my finger picks are shaped like, you should have some Hoffmeyer picks.
That's right.
I take them pretty much like I like them.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. Good. Okay. This process is intriguing me, and your motivation for it. All right. So we've gotten to the part where you're getting raw materials, and now for the first time you're experimenting with producing finger picks. And you had given a set to Noam Pikilny, who's been on this program. I'm going to drop in some tunes from Noam from one of the albums that we're pretty certain he used your picks on. So then how do you go from, okay, I'll make a set, I'll give them to Noam. Bela wanted me to make some, I give some to Bela. How do you get from that point then to saying, I'm selling finger picks, banjo finger picks? How do you get to that point? Now, when I ordered with you, I just went online and I make an order and boom, it's mailed to my house. So where do you get from the point of, I've got this pick perfected with some changes that people might want, like Sonny. So to where now you're, I don't know, how many of these things do you, is there any sort of, I don't want to give away any secrets of how many that you might mail out a year. I mean, or how many have you made? Can we just talk about a ballpark?
I can tell you that there are many thousands of Hoffmeyer pick sets out there, many thousands.
Wow.
And it's rare that a day goes by that I don't have an order for some picks. Some days I'll have 10 orders, but it keeps me busy when I'm not working. What happened was I got these blanks, and after they come out of that water jet machine, they're pretty rough, and so you have to do a lot of work on the edges. And I talked with a lot of the friends I have. You know, Lynn Dudenbostel is a great guy.
Oh, yeah, I know.
Down in Tennessee, and Lynn pointed me in the direction of something that would help me out and speed up the process an awful lot. So, you know, I took his advice, and that did speed things up quite a bit. We prototyped them for about 2 years, starting in 2012. Excuse me, in the summer of 2012. And after that, I was happy with the process. I was happy with the blanks we were getting. I was happy with how they sounded and how they felt, and it came time to design a logo and go at it for real. And so that's sort of how it started.
I wonder, 2012, you said the prototype. I know that I got my first set from you. I saw you on some social media, and I could it have been that long ago that I got a prototype set from you? I mean, I bought them from you, but it seems like I had those for a long time, and then I got Sonny's picks several years ago. But I wonder, could it have been, were you selling them when you were doing the prototype, or you sold this sort of, somehow I knew you were making them, but I don't think you had the business that you do now. I don't think it was that amped up to where you were in this business of thousands of picks going out.
Yeah, correct. It was something for fun on the side, for friends, mm-hmm. is what it amounted to. And then it grew. I advertised for the first time in Banjo Newsletter, and oh my goodness.
Oh, yeah.
The response from that first advertisement in Banjo Newsletter was astounding. And that's when I decided I really had to get serious about it, or else I was going to get buried in orders that I wouldn't be able to fill.
That'd be bad. You have a website. I want to talk about that. The website now that I went to, pretty easy to find, I think, if someone wants to find these picks. And then I want to talk about what you're offering now as the custom versus what would be more in line of the general. But so you have a website. Let's tell everybody that.
Yeah, the website is HoffmeyerPicks.com, HoffmeyerPicks, mm-hmm. PICKS.com.
Okay.
And that site is has served orders all over the world. Name a country, I have sent picks there.
Now, what I got from you recently, and what made me think that it's time for us to talk, is I had the original, I'll just call them the original, because we'll say pre-Osborne picks,
sure.
And I have some Osborne picks, which I like, and then you came out with what was marketed as, well, you had your regular picks, and then you had custom picks, and I wanted to see those, and I wanted to feel them, so talk about the difference between what would be the pick that you would have made, you know, up until the point of making Sonny's. And now, why is this a custom pick? What's the difference, if you can tell the audience that?
Sure. The standard pick is a lot closer to the dimensions of the original old picks from 1928. The customs are a little wider band, a little bit smaller hole in the band, but the same blade shape. So my feeling is that they are a little bit more comfortable on your finger. They seem to stay on your finger a little bit better, whilst still feeling like the old style picks. They have obviously, I mean, they're a nod to the old Nationals with a lot of improvements to make them more comfortable.
Well, comfort,
and the wider band was one of the things that we decided would make them a little bit more comfortable.
Yeah, you know, comfort. Once you get the sound and the tone and the ability to get that same response to each string with your finger picks, in comfort for people who play a lot, comfort is important because you wind up with these very distinct red marks on your fingers with the holes where your skin stuck through. At least I do. I seem to tighten mine up a lot. I don't know why that is, because I was stupid when I was young and learning, and I just thought, I'm never losing these again, and mine are still kind of clamped on pretty good. But
there's no wrong way to wear a pick.
Yeah.
There's no wrong way.
Except if you put them on backwards. And I've actually seen people...
If you put them on backwards, that's wrong, although... I follow a woman on Instagram who plays guitar with picks back.
Now that can make sense. That can make sense.
And she's rather good. So.
Okay. No, I won't.
But yeah, there's really no wrong way to wear the pick.
No, there isn't. There isn't. This is great. I love this type of stuff. And Dean, I'm talking to Dean Hoffmeyer, and I love this. I love this information to get to the listeners. You also are. You work for a newspaper. Can we mention the newspaper that you do and what
sure.
is your task?
Yeah, I'm a staff photographer and video editor at the Richmond Times-Dispatch in Richmond, Virginia.
Okay.
And I've been with the newspaper since 1994. So that's the job that makes my house payment is the working in the newsroom for the Times-Dispatch.
Good. Good. You're a photographer. I assume the photographs I've seen are of your on your website and whatever are ones that you've taken. Is that a fair assumption?
That is a fair assumption.
Okay.
Except one of the photographs was taken by my spouse. So.
Okay. All right. So you get to co-write on that.
And correct.
For all the copyright issues where people pay you, she can split that with you.
Well, my son and I are both in the photograph, and so
good.
She stepped up. And took that picture.
Well, there's some really brilliant. It's amazing that you can take great photographs of. I guess if you just take the finger picks, I've seen them. Just take the finger picks as an object, and you basically kind of black and white or pick out the silver color. They're great. They're great pictures. You should probably make available prints of some of those photos. Maybe you do. I didn't see it on the website, but I know you have stickers because I have one of those case stickers, which we all love those things. But you should probably make like little I don't know, prints of some of those photographs of your picks. There are geeky people that would buy them. I probably would.
Well, I mean, that's a terrific idea, one that I haven't considered, but I will now.
Well, if it doesn't work, you never heard it from me. Look,
Sonny, Sonny had just asked me for a photograph of some of his Osborne picks. So I worked last night to make a studio setup where I photographed some of the Osborne.
I saw that. Believe it or not, I've already seen that. So yeah, that looks nice.
And you know how we came up with Sonny's picks. He let me look at his personal picks at Banjothon one year, and I noted the style and shape of them. And so when it came time to make picks for him, they're replicas of the picks that he pulled out of his pocket that day.
Cool.
So they're shaped just like his picks were.
Well, I have. I have some of those, and I like those a lot. I just got the customs of yours. I guess a couple of days ago, and I've been working with them a little. I like them. They're very comfortable. I like it. You've got this figured out. Here I'll tell you a funny story about you and I have talked about Matthew Goin, right? The blue chip.
Yes.
Yeah.
Matt's
a
great guy.
He is a great guy. He's been on the show, and I love him to death. I know J.D. Crow's come to him a couple times. You know, that brown material, which makes that clean contact for your thumb pick, and never, it's like having a steel thumb pick for listeners, like having a steel thumb pick, but it's not. He has a steel or a metal, whatever holds the blade on. But the blade is made of some other product. I think I know what it is because I know what Matthew's real business is. But JD's come to him before and said, you know what you should do to market these things? This is about as goofy as my idea about selling pictures of pics. But he comes to Matthew once, and I think I was standing there at IBMA. You make these blades in different colors. You make this pink, you make it pink, and the women will like it, and you make it, which is great, except that material only comes in brown. You know what it is? You just can't order them up or dye them. It's for highly electronic. Is to protect and insulate. So, I mean, you just can't order a bunch of pink ones and green ones. That's a great idea. But I saw JD walk across the floor with his thumb pick. And I was talking to Matthew because it's just, I love hanging around him. He said, it was almost like in, the scene with Dustin Hoffman when the guy says plastics. The Graduate. When the guy says JD walks over to Matthew and he says, colors. And Matthew's like, what? You got to make these in pink and then blue, and then people will buy one of each color. Because Matthew's problem was they lasted so long. Why would you get another? And I have several that I bought from him, and I know that he makes special ones for JD, and because JD can eat them up. JD Crow, I mean Jerry Crow, not JD. Jerry Crow, Jerry Douglas. Geez, I'll get it right. Jerry Douglas eats them up. But I never forget that. It was reminding me so much. Colors. He said colors. And he left them. Matthew says he has no idea what I have to go through to make this.
Like Matt, we could make our picks in any color as long as it's silver.
That's right. That's right.
Because nickel silver doesn't come in too many other shapes.
No, I don't think it does. Man, I'm so glad I had a chance to talk to you. I've loved your picks forever since the original. And then the Osmond picks, and I'm enjoying playing with the custom picks that I purchased. I always make this disclaimer. I don't want you to give me something in exchange for being on the show. That's not how it works here. But I wanted to be able to say that I had them. And we've been talking about this for a week and a half and watching the mailbox. So I got them. I'm happy that I purchased them from you. I'm going to play a lot more using them, and I'll talk to you again sometime, and we'll have a face to face discussion about. What I think about them. I like them so far. I like all your picks. I think this is such a great concept and such a great project that you've taken on and, like you said, made part of your regular business life, I guess.
A lot of banjo players told me, and Bela Fleck had mentioned, he always lived in fear of running out of his old picks and didn't know exactly what he would do. And he said when we started making those picks, that fear was alleviated a little bit. Because he knew that there was something out there that would replace it.
Isn't that wow? That's amazing. That's an amazing comment right there. Like, and I other than that, getting run over by a truck or being lost, I don't know how you destroy finger picks, because probably the ones Sonny brought out of his pockets are the ones he's been playing with forever.
He said he'd had them on. He said he'd been using those for at least a decade.
So they're hard. And
they look like Sonny Osborne had been playing them for about a decade.
They'll take a beating. He's got some powerful hands. This is great, Dean. Listen, I'm so glad, Dean Hoffmeyer. Thanks for being a guest on Unreal Bluegrass. I've enjoyed it. Thank you for letting me pick your brain. I think I've asked enough. I don't want to get into details. I would hate for someone to listen to this and say I'm going to make picks. I don't think that'll happen. But, Dean, I'm so thrilled that you're doing this and so glad you had a chance to explain the story to the audience. And, I thank you so much.
Well, the pleasure has been all mine. I appreciate the time so much. And I thank you for the feedback on the picks that I sent you last week.
Well, you're welcome. We'll find each other somewhere on the road, I guess, once things even up a little bit and we get out. So thanks, Dean.
Appreciate it so much.
I'll let you go now. Bye.